Hello and welcome to the Show Up podcast. This is a place where we explore leadership and what that means for us, where we aim to show up with honesty, vulnerability, and curiosity. Use this space to explore what leadership means in your world and how you can show up to be the leader you want to be, whatever that means for you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Show Up podcast. This is Derry. I'm here with Graham and Jamie. How are you doing, chaps, today?
I don't know if that deep breath came through on the
silence.
the deep breath I was trying to give, I don't know whether that came through on the audio or not. But yeah, just, I've got to say, just taking a deep breath of pause to get into this conversation, because my head's been in about 60 different things already today.
And I would say the same, and you can probably hear my voice is a little bit strained at the moment. Some of that, I think, is one of the bugs or lurgies going around. But I'm also, I think, feeling that, I think, Graham, you just described it to me before we started recording, that six-week moment of hit the ground running, try and change the world in 1 year, and I'm feeling the strain after 6 weeks. So,
complete tangent for today's podcast, but how timely is it that Valentine's Day, where you're reminded about your loved ones, occurs 6 weeks after the start of the year.
There you go.
Interesting. Maybe we'll talk about that at a future date. Yeah.
How are you doing, Derry?
Yeah, I'm good. Very similar, actually. I've been running at 100 miles an hour, juggling a whole bunch of different things. Had the dubious pleasure of going to watch the rugby at Twickenham on Saturday and saw Wales lose, which was disappointing, especially because my 9-year-old that I took with me was proudly sporting his England rugby hoodie and gloating at me after the game. So that was fun. But no, I am good. And I'm very excited about what we're going to talk about today, which is purpose-driven leadership, or leadership with a sense of purpose.
Why does it excite you so much to explore this story?
Because I think it's a phrase that gets bandied around a lot, and a lot of firms play lip service to vision and mission and purpose and values and all of these different pieces. And I actually think in most cases, there's a somewhat generalized definition of what your purpose has to be, or the dimensions of your purpose. And I'm quite interested in organizations that have a different purpose and unashamedly adopt and drive towards a different purpose that doesn't necessarily fit with what they're supposed to believe in. And I think there's a whole bunch of different narrative that flies around purpose and the dimensions of purpose. So I think there's much for us to discuss, really. Mm. I'm excited about that.
Have you got any examples? So for our listeners to get their heads around, what do we kind of mean by purpose-driven leadership? Is it leadership or company? So they don't necessarily always mean the same thing.
Well, I think there are different levels to it, right? So there is an organizational purpose that presumably somewhere in the organization's history, whether explicitly or not, the organization has started moving towards trying to achieve something, trying to change something in the world. And some, rarely all of its leaders will be trying to push in the same direction, and there will be a whole spectrum of people whose personal purpose aligns to greater or lesser extents with that organizational purpose. But I think of purpose as, what is it we're trying to leave in the world? What are we trying to change as a result of our existence? How do you guys think about it?
How about you, Graham?
So for me, it's purpose is about, it's the other side to what you said, I think, Derry, coming at it from the other angle. You know, what do I want to achieve in the world?
At the individual level.
Yeah, and the individual level from there, but also an organizational purpose too. Same thing, we're trying to achieve something in the world. And so that's what can we make happen type purpose. Jamie?
I was just thinking. I mean, when we talked about the topic, I was thinking, what are the examples of purpose-driven anything? I thought Ben and Jerry's as an example of a purpose-driven, very explicitly purpose-driven brand. And actually, I thought, if we're talking about purpose-driven leadership, is it the founders of Ben and Jerry, who I would say is maybe as an example of that's real purpose-driven leadership, the creation of a business that is there to serve something which isn't necessarily about the product it's selling, which is not necessarily always the same as a company which celebrates how it's purpose-driven, but actually some of it, frankly, is corporate PR. And I can think of one of my previous employers, in fact, that celebrated its commitment to helping to save the world by supporting the climate partnership to much great sort of public fanfare at a time over a decade or so ago. And when you actually kind of lifted the lid on what was really all that about, although it was a big purpose-driven public statement, it didn't really get embodied in the hearts and minds of everybody who worked in the organization. So I think there's a real distinction between authentically purpose-driven leadership and what happens as a consequence of that versus the badge we can give to organizations almost mistakenly because they want you to see the virtues they're signaling.
Are you familiar with the term greenwashing?
I've come across it once or twice.
That sounds like a potential instance of greenwashing, of basically trying to claim that you're doing good things, but not actually driving your organization towards it. I've got another example actually of a purpose-driven organization whose purpose has very little to do with the core kind of commercial function of the business, which is a small insurance innovation consultancy who called 90, where they are structurally set up to give 90% of their profits away. And they have a stated goal. I think their stated goal is to generate $1 billion for nonprofits. So they're a small team. It's a big, hairy, audacious goal in exactly the way that is intended. But there's no getting away from that purpose because they've structurally set up the organizational structure, the shareholder agreements, etc., of their business such that they're required to give away 90% of their profits to nonprofits, which has absolutely nothing to do with insurance innovation. Insurance innovation is just a tool to generate the money to help others.
So there are very different ways in which this can manifest.
There is. And for me, the word that I guess I find sometimes gets missed in examples like that is reality. You read the stuff about growth and ambition and set stretch targets and all those kind of things, and listen to the pulse of society and what your employees want. And they want to be doing good things for the environment and giving back and all those things. But how do organizations then give time for reality to settle in as those purposes are set? Because if it's done in a didactic, this is our mission, are you going to follow it? That's like throwing mud at a wall and hoping some of it sticks, right? So you need to give time for any integration to take place. Reality check that in, is it actually physically possible for us to make this happen? And are we happy with the compromises that will come along the way to get there? So many fascinating questions that seem to come up for me to check whether the purpose-driven leadership is actually achievable, attainable, and desired by those people who are there.
Yeah. Do you think purpose-driven is synonymous with ethical or moral in terms of the business's strategy, etc.? Is that really what is generally meant by purpose-driven? Or is it just having some kind of broader mission?
I think it's expected that it is ethical, but the two are actually distinct.
And partly what I'm thinking about the tech giants, for example. So you look at an organization like Meta, Facebook and Instagram, who have been in hot water recently for child sexual exploitation issues, and the fact that child sexual exploitation content is still widely available on those platforms, etc. Now, those organizations, I'm not aware of any purpose they would articulate beyond, you know, building the metaverse or whatever Zuckerberg would say his purpose is, but they've fairly objectively and clearly, I think, fallen short on ethical standards in terms of the way that they operate. So it'd be hard for them to claim to be a purpose-driven organization from that point of view. And then on the flip side, you've got something like X, where Elon Musk has, I think, stated a very clear purpose around free speech for his platform. And yet you could very easily say, well, the reason that he has free, you could hypothesize that the reason that he's pushing on free speech is because he wants the best possible training data for his AI models, which is a underlying commercial goal to accumulate wealth for himself. No idea if that is true, but there's a reasonable
There's a thread.
hypothesis you can put together there.
Yeah, there's a thread there, isn't there?
So you've got, you know, one organization in X that is claiming to speak very, claiming to operate very specifically within a set of ethical boundaries. Whether you agree with those, with free speech and the ethics, etc., is kind of moot. It's but there's a clear set of ethics there that he claims to operate under, but there may be a hidden agenda versus an organization like Meta that may claim to be more purpose-driven, but the commercial dark side is hidden as well. Is it even possible to be purpose-driven at that scale? I don't know.
Well, the thought that comes up for me there is, under whose basis of ethical judgment is it determined whether their practice is ethical or not? And that's probably a whole other episode, to be fair. But that, to me, is an influencing factor of what is deemed to be ethical practice. What are the ethical standards that this purpose is being executed under? Because we've seen today more times than probably possible, or more times than ever in the history of the industrialized world, if an organization is deemed to act inethically or unethically these days, they are hauled over the coals very, very quickly.
Well, and the mechanism that allows them to be hauled over the coals is the legal system, which in principle and philosophy is supposed to define our ethics, right? But I mean, that is a whole other debate as to whether that works or not. But
Oh, well, then you've just given a great example. Then the big tech giants, they've found a way from a corporate structuring standpoint to be subject to very little direct sovereign legal oversight because they've just shifted responsibility from different locations around the world to find the most supportive either legal or financial framework for their own end for their own ends, which isn't necessarily to do with purpose, it's to do with shareholder return.
Yeah,
And
there's a decent argument that they are maneuvering themselves towards being digital nation states that aren't constrained by traditional nation state boundaries and legal structures. Again, that's another topic.
yeah,
Together.
I was gonna say,
and then
but I
and then
think
you
back
get
to back.
globalized corporate tax starts to come in and tax rates and all that kind of stuff, doesn't it?
I think that's, I mean, for the purpose of the conversation, we're saying perhaps there's a distinction between we're setting out to be purpose-driven, really, I mean, authentically, whether we end up being able to execute that in every aspect of what we do. That's the continuous journey, continuous mission, because as you say, scale is going to make it difficult to do that every single day and every single part of it. But if your intention is to be purpose-driven, maybe that's where we could sort of focus. And say for those who are really trying to do it, as opposed to greenwashing, what are the pros and cons of doing this?
And are we therefore saying that purpose-driven is essentially a catch-all phrase for organizations that have stated goals beyond maximizing value for shareholders. Whether they have, maybe it's triple bottom line type accounting, its impact on communities, etc. But like doing that with a purity that isn't about, well, that's the best long-term way of growing shareholder value. But there's something beyond that that the organization is trying to achieve. Is that what we're saying?
I think it's got that element to it for sure. There's a high, you know, there's a high, in recent years, there's been a high demand for ESG and DEI based policies, practices, ways of being, purposes for a business. Been a huge demand for traditional organizations to have those documented and clear and actioned by the whole organization. And newer startups that are starting up with those kind of philosophies at their core and those intentions at their core.
So what's driving or what has driven the push towards ESG and DEI as priorities for organizations? Because I don't think in many cases that is a purpose that has come from within the organization.
Shareholder expectation, customer base expectation, financial services expectation. And, you know, there's stories emerging of ESG linked business terms for organizations and banking with banking relationships.
We've had that in supplying to large organizations. We've had to provide evidence of our climate action plans, for example, as a precondition of doing business with them, because they have an obligation to review their supply chain in detail. But that obligation comes from their ability to access capital.
So that's not your purpose necessarily, but you've now got to make sure it's stated very clearly and have a stance on it as an organization. Is that what went on when that came in?
No, in that specific situation, I said that's an inappropriate ask for our relationship. I'm not doing it. Because it's not part of my purpose, our purpose as an organization. And so my thesis is that most of these organizations have had things like ESG and DEI imposed on them politically and economically in various ways, as opposed to them truly being part of a purpose-driven organization that has come from that leadership team, if
I
that
think the
makes sense.
thing is, for me, something had to change in order for organizations to care for the planet, but also think more ethically about how they go about their business. I think in the last 20 years, there's been a need for that to change, particularly. And this, the ESG approach has been very much a vehicle by which that a stick to beat that change with. As you say, how effective has that truly been for organizations with all the effort that they put into that? I guess the data will start to show, right?
Well, and it's an interesting thing, I think, is like that scenario, which I agree with, is like what has happened, then it essentially means that there are purposes being imposed on organizations and leadership teams from out that they wouldn't choose to do willingly. Because, as we've said, something had to happen to force that change through. So that's something has happened. But then those organizations end up where maybe there's nobody in that organization that is genuinely passionate about that purpose, and is therefore everybody is leading in some way where what they care about personally doesn't fully align with what the organization's having to care about. And that's a real leadership challenge, I think, because you can find yourself day to day in a very incongruent position, where you're being required for the purposes of your role in the organization to to spend time solving problems and doing things that you don't necessarily care about personally that much. And you've got to inspire your team to do the same.
Yeah, and that's why I say if organized, I remember a law firm, mid-sized law firm, asked me to come in and help them specifically align vision. And the incongruence was that they hadn't spent any time giving individual purpose the time to integrate with organizational purpose. So that's what we did. We spent time giving the space to explore the pros and cons of their individual purposes in the context of the organization. What I think it led to a 3% attrition in the workforce because some that whole exercise led to people realizing I don't want to be here. But for the 97% who did stay, they could then understand the narrative of thinking that they needed to go through in order to get aligned with what the organization was asking of them.
So how did you help them join those dots? Like what was the thought process that they went through to figure out does their personal mission align with the
Well, the
organizational?
first one was understanding what their personal mission was, because they
Yeah.
hadn't really done that. But then it was an exploration of that in the context of the organizational one and what that looked like from a practical level. So what they were doing on a day-to-day in the day-to-day way of being in the business, and exploring those sticking points and accelerators of motivation that they felt all the time. I said, ah, right, so can they be related into this conversation around purpose? They found that it was. And one of the nice things that came out was it wasn't expected that your individual purpose needs to m directly marry with the organizational one. It was that you had to know where the links are, where you share the same space, and also know where the links are, where you don't share the same space, and what that means. So it's almost like a Venn diagram of the two parts and just how much overlay is there really going to be. And just letting that, giving the organization or system the chance to settle with that idea that people's individual purpose can be slightly differently aligned to the organizational one. But they've got that awareness of where they step in and step out and why they do it.
Made me think actually, we're in the process of hiring at the moment, and we've got a couple of really good candidates through to final round, and they're both sort of mid-20s and still studying part-time alongside their work. And one of the discussions that we're having internally is how long will they be interested in working with us? Because when they finish their studies, they might say, right, I've got my experience, I've got my latest qualification, I'm ready for the next step. And we may not be in a position to offer them that next step. And actually, I'm really quite comfortable with the idea that they might only be with us for a couple of years because what they need aligns with what we need for those couple of years. And if we go into that with our eyes open, we'll have a much better level of overlap of their purpose and our purpose and my purpose as a leader, than going in saying, well, I'm only interested in hiring people who may commit to us for the rest of their working lives, which it feels unrealistic and as a starting point.
Maybe that's another question you could ask into that mix, right? This is our stated purpose. What in that troubles you, and what in that energizes you, and see what responses they give.
Yeah. What do you
It
think?
certainly made, yeah. I was going to say, whilst listening to this, it's certainly, I think that last question that Graham's just posed there would allow an employer and a prospective employee to at least be quite explicit at the outset. Where are we comfortable that we're aligned or misaligned, and how comfortable are we that there is potentially some lack of overlap, either between the companies and mine or mine and the company's real purpose and values? I think that's a very important part of what often is overlooked. At the point at which people commence that stage of their career. As I listen as well, I keep coming back to this whole idea of, well, every organization probably does have some form of purpose. So what are we saying about purpose-driven businesses? it's clearly got to be something other than we exist to institutionalize our own values or to carry on to make money so we can survive. It's got to be something different more than that. And that is where I think that the comments you made about the things like ESG being imposed on industries generally means to me that that's not a purpose-driven thing. That's a response to market or human forces or climate forces, if you want to call it like that. You need to, there's a reaction there. But I don't think there are that many really purpose-driven organizations. And I therefore think by default, there aren't that many purpose-driven leaders who, irrespective of whether their business could keep going or not, exist for some reason that is more than just making money. I really do think this is, as I was thinking about it, I just think this is a really small field.
So the outside of third sector charitable organizations, where you'd imagine, I think, that being purpose driven is more of a norm in those founders of those organizations. I guess if you have a purpose beyond making money, and you think that the best way to achieve that is to set up a commercial private a private business, a commercial organization of some kind, that probably is a relatively rare subset. I guess, though, is it necessary to say that your purpose must be distinct from the purpose of making money?
I don't think it is.
I just thought,
Living
I was just thinking in terms of the way in which you read about it in the press. These are examples of purpose-driven organizations. I realized I've revealed my ignorance enormously about the whole fact that there is the whole NGO community around the world essentially exists because they believe in purpose, which is not making money necessarily. They've got to have it as a hygiene factor to keep going. But for any listeners who think, Jamie, what an idiot. Well, you're right. I am, because I completely overlooked that whole part of existence. But I think it's definitely something which is the way in which it is labeled in the media as if it's some kind of positive thing, and if it genuinely is, I think there are very few real purpose-driven organizations and therefore leaders compared to the number who would say we're purpose-driven, like very large consumer packaged goods company that has purpose all the way through its leadership development, its management onboarding and so on and so forth, but actually it exists to make money for shareholders.
I'd take an example of Unilever, who I don't know if they still do actually, but when I was consulting to them years ago, ran a program, Global Handwashing Day, where they had a dedicated internal team whose primary goal was to encourage people into the behavior of washing their hands in developing nations. Very noble goal, massive health benefits, et cetera, et cetera. But you also can't help but notice that Unilever sells soap. And therefore, part of what they're doing is market development to get more people in a position where they might buy their products. Now, I don't see anything wrong with that because they're still getting the benefits. And I guess so that's the maybe, Jamie, the definitional kind of tipping point here is it purely about being purpose driven and making money is just a means to fund the purpose, or is purpose driven an environment where you are able to do good things that also benefit your money making machine to make those things sustainable over time? Like, if your purpose is part of the business that you operate in some way, does that somehow devalue the purpose piece of it?
All
Or is
these
it
are great
still?
questions.
Yeah, for me, that becomes to where you kind of, that my thoughts there go to this idea of how what you see as the important thing that a business does. And if you say purpose is a concept that drives
leaders and organizations towards achieving something, that thing that you're then trying to achieve can be multifactorial. In today's developed economies and most of the economies in the world, that has to have a financial performance element to it. Because, in, as you said there, Jamie, even in NGOs, financial performance is needed for sustainability, i.e. them to still exist, not sustainable business practices. So, but then there can be other things alongside that. And I believe there should be other things alongside that that are non-financially driven purposes. But there needs to be an understanding of all the elements and how they integrate. And I actually think from my intergenerational work, that's one of the things that's missing. That triangle of economic performance, people performance, and some other performance, environmental performance. That triangle never really gets explored. So there's an expectation for two, environment and people. They need to be concentrated on all the time and looked after and make sure they're perfect, because, or perfect being how we want it. But without that third element, the other two necessarily can't, not necessarily can happen in today's business world. So for me, the idea of economic performance being part of a purpose is essential for that purpose to be fulfilled.
I totally agree with that. You can't, like, even if you operate as a charity, you've still got to demonstrate that you're a good place for people that fund charities to put their funding. Otherwise, you won't exist for very long.
Unless, of course, we go and buy Show Up Island, where we can decide how the economy works, and we might decide that it has to run a completely different way to the rest of the world.
Indeed. Our purpose would then be to experiment with different economic models. Very happy. I'm sure there'd be an awful lot of people who'd be willing to come along to that journey and say, okay, let's try the one where all of the money comes to me, or we give it all away, whatever. There are definitely a lot of different purposes out there. But I think the idea that a fully transparent, this is what we're here to do, and recognize all the elements that are necessary to create the conditions for that to be sustainably possible. I think that's being a little bit closer to the truth than the virtue signaling label that can be slapped on an organization. Say, oh, purpose-driven. Well, actually, no. Sometimes they're not purpose-driven, really. So I think those who just go, you know, this is what we're really about, and it does require us to make money to be financially viable. But actually, what we're trying to do is this, and everything we actually really try and achieve is geared towards helping that happen. And that's more than just making money.
Yeah. I think there's we talked a lot about the kind of external purpose as well. And actually, Graham, your people point of your triangle, one of the things that I see very often in the small consulting firms that I work with is founders have started those firms with a vision that they want to create a different culture, a different environment to work in than things they've experienced before. And I think that's a perfectly valid purpose as well. Is to say we're not necessarily going to try and impact the world outside of our organization in any purpose-driven way, but we are going to try and create a work environment that is better, different, whatever, for people than the ones we've experienced before. I think that's a perfectly valid purpose.
Well, let's explore the validity for the listeners. Derry, you run your own organization. What's the individual purpose that drives you to run it?
But do you know what? This is an interesting case study, right? So one of the things that I get that I wouldn't get in any employed role is flexibility. And everybody in my team has extreme flexibility in how they work, where they work, when they work. And some organizations offer that, but not that many, and certainly not to an extent that I could be as flexible as I am running my own business, which is a slightly different thing. But cynically, one of the reasons that I have set up the business to operate flexibly is it gives me access to a massively undertapped talent pool of the extreme, because I live 20 miles outside London, and there are dozens and dozens and dozens of mostly mums who used to work high-powered, very responsible big jobs in the city and no longer want to do that for various reasons, and they love to work 2-3 days a week flexibly from home around school run hours. So cynically, it gives me access to a talent pool that others aren't prepared to address. So I'm passionate about that, but I'm also a bit cynical about it in terms of it gives me advantage in the business I'm building. So is that purpose driven, or is that just a, you know, cynical grab for talent? I don't know.
If you were put it this way, if you were doing it for the benefit, purely for the benefit of getting semi-retired or want to work, part-time work mums back into the workplace, I would say that would be absolutely purpose-driven. If that was the measure of success, which you said, that's why I'm doing this, I would say that was to be really authentically purpose-driven. The fact that you're taking advantage of something which is actually a very smart bit of thinking, which is, how do I use what is around me in order for us to build a business? It just so happens that's actually the condition that exists. If you were to flip it and say, I'm here to serve the purposes of people who actually would like to gradually get back into work, I'd say that was inauthentic, purpose-driven virtue signaling. But just recognizing that that is something that's there, and actually saying, well, actually what we're trying to do is to build a brilliant, thriving business. It just so happens we'd like to do that using local workforce demographics.
And let's not overlook, for listeners, what we discussed on one of the previous episodes. And, you know, Derry's admission about being hyper-systemized. Yeah? It's a very practical application of something that motivates you that could sound really insensitive to some listeners. He just wants to make money through people who, you know, they could go to that conclusion, right? But we have the pleasure of knowing you off mic and knowing that it's quite heartfelt, that intention.
Yeah.
To make that difference. So,
well, I see it as a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But if you were to say which one came first, then you'd probably go, well, I wanted to grow a business. I was building a business, potentially.
And yeah, to an extent, the business model was born out of my own frustration at inflexibility when I was working as a day rate consultant, and clients would insist that I worked 5 days a week instead of four, and would reserve the right to pass judgment on whether the reasons I wanted to work four were valid for them. So if I said, oh, I only want to work 4 days a week because I'm training for the powerlifting world championships, totally valid. If I said, I only want to work 4 days a week because I want to have a day at home to play golf, not valid. That type of frustration is partly what led to this business model, and an understanding that if I was feeling that, then there were dozens of others that would be feeling it even more intensely, where, you know, being at home to look after your children was not seen as a valid reason for wanting to work flexibly. Things have changed a lot in the last 5 years, but even it's still a problem.
Yes, there is.
I've got another question, though. Is there anything ethically wrong with not being a purpose-driven organization? Is it reasonable to just set up an organization and say, our primary goal is to make money for everyone involved in the organization, or not even everybody, for whoever founded it?
See, to me, that is a purpose.
Yeah. It's just not what would normally be classed as a purpose, right?
Well, it's the 1940s version of a purpose, right? Yeah. There'd be the investigation. When did the act of purpose-driven leadership be formed? And was it formed by accident or was it formed deliberately? That's where my curious brain's just gone instantly with that.
Yeah.
I think, well, I have a spontaneous reaction to the question, which was, it's like thinking about it as an answer. I'd maybe ask a question back on that, which is it more ethically sound to be honest about why you're doing something than to pretend for virtue signaling purposes that you're doing it for something which isn't genuinely what it's all about, even though it sounds ethically much more effective for attracting talent in the press, for your consumer base? I think if you turn around and said, hey, listen, I'm in it for the money, okay, I want to make other people rich as well, but I'm in it for the money. Okay, you still have the opportunity to choose whether you want to be part of that kind of purpose or not. But you know what, ethically, you know, you're being as honest as the next person.
Yeah.
Would everybody agree with your purpose? I don't think that's ethics, actually. I think that's subjective opinion.
Mm. And that's just to go with to employment, right?
Yeah. Is there anything wrong with making money? That could be a political stance rather than an ethical one. Are you breaking the laws in order to do it? Then you've got an ethical difference. So I personally don't think if you're being transparent, if you're being honest, and you're not trying to virtue signal in some way, you wouldn't necessarily always call it a purpose-driven organization, but there's nothing ethically unsound about saying, we're here to make money.
Yeah, and as you say, as long as you do that within the laws of the jurisdictions you operate in and you're paying your taxes and all of that stuff. So I am inclined to think that inauthentic virtue signaling is less ethical and less purpose-driven than authentically signaling a lack of virtue, if you like.
Yeah.
Isn't that ironic?
But that's what undoes people.
Yeah.
I seem to notice that about 90% of articles, in fact, my 11-year-old son called it out the other day. I don't want to get news channels or news websites on my phone, Dad, because all they ever talk about is negative stuff. And the gap is it's always about the gap. This is the standard we think everything should live by and breathe by. And this is where this person didn't meet it. And it feels like if you are inauthentically virtue signaling, you leave yourself wide open to that criticism. And some people are Teflon and just let that criticism roll off them and keep carrying on. I saw a fascinating article the other day about the Super Bowl. I don't know if you chaps have seen this.
No.
Kanye West spent $7 million on a 30-second advert in the Super Bowl. It was him on his phone in the car saying, we spent all the budget on the slot, so we didn't produce a video. I just want you to go to Yeezy.com and buy what's on there. The reports come out that 24 hours later, he made $19 million in sales.
There you go.
Now, ethically, some media outlet has challenged what a waste of money on the advert. Has he done good business?
Depends what your goal is, right? If your goal is to get a return on that investment, then he's probably done all right, as long as his gross.
Particularly as some of the other retailers who were stocking his stock are trying to get it out the back door as fast as possible because they don't want to be associated with it.
What he's done, the problem is with the ethical thing is that the news outlets are saying, well, you didn't do the big glamorous multi-spend advert that we expect Super Bowl adverts to become.
Yeah, you didn't play the game the way we say it should be played.
Right, I'm waving my finger in the air now.
Uh-oh, now we've woke him up. Look at that, everybody. His voice is cleared. He's there.
Yeah, a swig of water. Got the
in the last flowing. 5 minutes, he's there. Look at this.
But you know, I'm my purpose is to end on a high rather than start strong and fade. I think with this, you've got a great example. The media, whether it be state-owned, proprietary, whatever it might be, they are part of a mouthpiece which is creating the conditions where things like virtue signaling labels of purpose-driven are coming from in many respects, not exclusively, but that is part of what I'd call a drift from journalistic integrity into attracting eyeballs by coming up with slogans to attach to things that can attract people to come and talk to them or to watch them when they're doing either investigations or coverage on different organizations, because it's just part of what's evolved over the last 30, 40, 50 years as media has moved away from, particularly the news media, moved away from just reflecting what's going on to having an opinion and speaking for the people. So I think there's a bit of a conspiracy theory type part of me that's kind of emerging in this last 5-minute rant. But actually, the purpose bit of this I think is it's not coming from the leader themselves. It's coming from somebody else giving them the label. That's exactly what we're saying. I think it's a real damaging thing that's being co-opted by organizations to say, oh, if the media thinks I'm purpose-driven, they'll talk about me. That's reflective of the consumers that we're trying to attract, but it's just not authentic.
Well, and quite a few high profile examples of individuals some way down an organization making decisions in line with their own beliefs or influenced by the media, like you say, Jamie, and doing things. I'm thinking of like Bud Light and Starbucks and Target, who have run various campaigns driven by the beliefs of one or two individuals in that organization that have massively backfired on them because they weren't reflective of their actual customer base and the people that were using it because they're living in that little bubble that is concocted by the media largely.
And
So,
shamelessly, and I think of one of those examples, so they're shamelessly trying to play to a fashionable concept, thinking that that would open up a whole different population that would suddenly flood to their product and buy it. But actually, I think as you say, what was then exposed, well, not least because of the reaction of the public that they do have in their customer base, was very damaging both to the brand, the individuals who decided to do that. It exposed the issue of virtue signaling for, in some ways, not necessarily quite what it really is, but actually it did a real disservice to the population that they were trying to attract, in my opinion.
And actually that's I think that brings us to a really neat point of that just virtue signaling or greenwashing or whatever it is almost always will backfire. And the really hard yards, if you want to be a purpose-driven leader, is to actually bring the organization with you to serve whichever population you're trying to have your purpose focused on. And that, and not necessarily people, it could be the environment or whatever it is, making money. It doesn't matter what that
That
purpose is,
authenticity is
but
critical.
if you don't bring the whole organization such that it's authentic, then it's almost always going to backfire eventually.
It's tough to be true to yourself and a purpose because you have to make trade-offs. You have to make trade-offs. In some cases, you might have to make a trade-off that I can't attract everybody that would otherwise be great people to have working for me or working with me. I can't attract all the investment I might want because I'm not appealing to everybody, but actually, it's more important for me to stick to my guns about why I'm doing this. And if people like that, they'll join me, they'll back me, they'll buy from me. If they don't like it, it's their choice. And leaders coming into the role, I think, have got to ask themselves that really hard question. I think a great point that Graham made earlier on. If you're coming into a leadership role, how much have you really checked how closely aligned your why, your purpose is to what you're going to be representing to people who are going to come and work for you, to your colleagues and peers, or to the outside world? Have you really checked it? Have you reconciled yourself to any lack of overlap that exists in that Venn diagram? And when people come and work for you, how well have you had that conversation with them? And how often do you check in with folks about, are we more overlapped or less overlapped than before? And how are people feeling about the fact there may not be a perfect alignment? I think that's just even just using that as a frame, it starts to have a much more authentic feel about it. Just recognizing the world isn't perfect. We do make compromises, but it's okay to talk about them.
I think that's a great wrap up at the end of this conversation. If you're intrigued by this, two things you should go and do. One, go and check out our episode from series one on personal mission, because as Graham said in his example of the law firm earlier, very hard to know if your purpose is aligned with the organization's purpose if you haven't figured out what your purpose is. So go and check out that episode and have a think about personal mission. Thing two to do is read the newsletter that will be coming out alongside this episode and our previous episodes. Get subscribed and see where that takes you in terms of thinking about what purpose-driven leadership might mean for you.
Yeah, and like us, rate us, recommend us, because our purpose is to get to as many people as possible, and that means we go up the rankings. Now, look, see how authentic I'm being now?
Going to say, I can smell the BS coming out of your mouth. And I realized, like, we've never explained to people why we do the newsletter now. We've realized that through all of these episodes, we can give some hints and tips and things that have worked and models and stuff. But we wanted to use the newsletter as an avenue to be able to actually, for one of us, to just share a thought process or some thinking that an individual leader can actually apply and use beyond just listening to us on the tube or on the dog walk or in the car. You know, to actually give them the space to sit back, take an action with what they're considering. So that's why we do the newsletter, and that's why we believe it would be valuable to you, the listeners.
Well, and let's be even more authentic than that. We think the newsletter is a route to having a conversation with you and exchanging thoughts and understanding where you're at and how we might be able to help you.
There you go, everyone.
So if you want to have a chat, sign up to the newsletter and let's share some thoughts. And with that, I say thank you, gents.
Thanks, chaps.
Have a great day.
Look forward
everyone.
To the next one. Have a great
day.
Yeah,
till next time. Take care.
Find any of the subjects we cover in this podcast spark inspiration, curiosity, or concern within you, do drop us a line. Details are in the comments below, and we'll be happily there to listen and see how we can offer the best support for you.